I always, whenever I do an interim sermon, which is what this is going to be, I do a little disclaimer for those of you who are guests and visitors and newcomers. This is not the usual fare. Usually our sermons are about various aspects of life and living, the human condition, social issues. This one is about this place. Unless you see the beautiful picture of it, the drawing of it on the cover. I'd like to begin with a Wendell Berry poem from The Country of Marriage. What we owe the future is not a new start, for we can only begin with what has happened. We owe the future the past, the long knowledge that is the potency of time to come. The long knowledge that is the potency of time to come. In other words, whatever has happened fuels and inspires what will happen. The possibilities and potentials, the potency of the future, comes not out of thin air, but from the past. So today I'd like to talk with you just a little bit about the current state of the congregation, a little about your recent past, and a bit about ministry and your future. I do this with some of the developmental tasks of an interim period in my mind, specifically the tasks that deal with acknowledging your past, identifying your unique identity and your current strengths and challenges, and envisioning your future. For a long time, I was a member of the Pacific Central District of the UUA conflict management team. Actually, Dick Park was a member of that team with me for quite a few years. In our training, we learned about the five levels of congregational conflict, ranging from a simple problem to solve all the way up to an intractable conflict in which people would sooner see the church destroyed than give up any ground. That's a pretty extreme level. Usually we worked in the middle levels, 2, 3, and 4. With 5, you need a flock of lawyers or something. The one who created and taught us this scale of congregational conflict, specialist Speed Lees, later discerned another level, which he called Level Zero. In Level Zero, we find not a conflicted congregation, but essentially a depressed one. One that is kind of stuck in neutral, in a repeating rut with little forward movement. I realized when I arrived here 2 years ago that this congregation had some of the characteristics of a level zero. It felt a bit stuck, somewhat depressed, with low energy, and with a fair amount of anxiety about the future. And this followed some recent and problematic issues around ministries. And in one case, there was a significant loss of membership over the ministry of one previous minister. So there was fear expressed to me that this congregation has a reputation as not being a good place for a minister to serve. And here I was coming for a second time, really a third if you count my internship back in 1971. But I would like to emphatically state that this is not true. This congregation has worked very well and very cooperatively with me these last 2 years. And I was able to recommend it in good conscience as a place to serve when ministers called me to inquire about the opening for the next minister. A significant part of this congregation's recent past has been a widespread anxiety about money. Largely, I think, as a result of the membership loss, which is loss in pledges. When I arrived, there was a pervasive feeling of scarcity and a practice of drawing down the endowment fund to cover years of deficit budgets. You may recall that I conducted a whole series of little meetings, cottage meetings, I called them, and this anxiety came through those meetings loud and clear. As a result of trying to stop this pattern, the ministerial salary was reduced from full to three-quarter time by the board just before I arrived. But I hasten to add that this is something I agreed to because I could do so at this stage in my life. But I was well aware in accepting this that not all ministers who would consider coming here after I leave would be able to accept a three-quarter time position. The year after I came, one part-time salaried position was also cut, the assistant to the administrator. To balance the budget last year, other staff positions to possibly cut hours from were put on the table. The choir director and the director of religious education, to name two most prominent ones that were just put on the table. But you would have none of it. You may recall this, which says something about what is important and valuable to you as a congregation. Instead, the focus was placed on the other side of the financial equation, increasing giving. So last year, we conducted the first every member face-to-face canvass in a long time. And I facilitated a training for some 20 dedicated canvassers. And this face-to-face experience, this face-to-face pledge drive, brought in a healthy increase in pledges. Plus, there were some special contributions that were made to retain the DRE at three-quarter time. This year, although the pledging is not quite complete, the canvas looks like it will be successful in at least duplicating last year's level. And that is without last year's special contributions that were made to retain the DRE at three-quarter time. In a few minutes, as you've heard, there will be a congregational meeting, an informational meeting, to look at the proposed budget for the next fiscal year, which begins on July 1st. Those of you who have been here for a while will see that a lot of progress has been made toward financial stability. With two successful pledge drives last year and a wonderful auction headed up by Gene B. That was very successful and hadn't been budgeted for a while before, so putting that back in the budget was helpful. We also had special contributions from generous members. And we had a legacy giving event headed by the stewardship committee that will help to replenish the endowment fund, which also funds part of our operating expenses each year. So it's an important, not just as a cushion, but for income each year. Although there is a small deficit in the budget you'll see, the position of the minister has been restored to full time. So your next minister will be able to devote himself most fully to the developmental tasks that you have set before him. Just as important as the healthier numbers in the budget, I would say, is the change in attitude regarding money. I sense a much more positive can-do attitude about funding your dreams and your aspirations, and a definite shift away from that timid sense of scarcity that I found here when I arrived. Another thing I noticed when I arrived is that there weren't as many opportunities as there could be to help members deepened their sense of connection to one another. I felt that the glue of friendship and sense of community could be strengthened here. The board agreed and chose to have me focus on one of the options I presented for this second interim year, that is creating a new small group ministry program. The small structured groups of this type of program are aimed at enriching both intimacy and ultimacy, that is, strengthening the bonds among members by offering a chance to get to know one another on a deeper level than can be achieved at coffee hour or in committee meetings, and offering a chance for members to discuss topics of importance in their lives, including beliefs, life experiences, exploring spiritual journeys, and ultimate questions. Now, there are two groups here that continue from a previous small group program, and they are continuing. But I found that newcomers almost never heard about them. Plus, they were full or near full. So we launched a new program with three new groups, and each one meets monthly. These groups will continue until December. This is different from the older program. And then they will reform into new groups next year. So you can stay in the program and get to meet somewhat of a new group of people. There would probably be some overlap as well. This is a nice way to do a mixer over a long period of time. I conducted some training for four initial facilitators, Kat Brayman, Diane Estrada, Jim Harrison, and Manny Rankin. And these facilitators continue to meet with me to share ideas and to support one another, and that will continue happening. Two of the groups have some limited space, I should say, for new members. So if you're interested, you could still plug in, and you can speak with me or one of the facilitators afterwards. By next year, there may be enough new participants and new facilitators to create more than three new groups. That's the hope. And Diane Estrada will be the coordinator of the program when I leave. So this has been a program that I have seen in other congregations that I've served as interim, where they didn't have a program at all and started one on my watch. I have seen it really deepen and strengthen the bonds between members. So I'm very glad that the board chose this project and that people stepped forward to make this happen. Regarding membership, I mentioned the loss of membership that happened some years back. I was your interim minister for 1 year, 14 years ago, as some of you recall, and it was dismaying to return in 2016 to find that your membership number had slipped by more than 80. We have focused on increasing members during the past 2 years, and 29 new members have joined so far. Some of them returning to membership from a time away, some of them Unitarian Universalists from other areas of the country, and some brand new to Unitarian Universalism. Now, for a congregation of this size, 29 new members sounds like a healthy increase. But before you cheer too much, it is sobering to look at the other side of this figure, the number of members lost through moving away, through death, or inactivity. So I counted recently with the membership committee that 6 people moved, 6 died, and early on, 6 were removed for inactivity or resigned, not 6, 9. So that's 6, 6, and 9 added up, and you'll see that the net gain is there, but it's a lot smaller. This is very sobering. The attrition of members, however, is typical in congregations. And the fact that a smaller percentage of younger people attend congregations than used to in the past, I think, also contributes to the situation where membership doesn't grow very much in congregations generally, not just ours. I am reminded of what the Red Queen said to Alice in Lewis Carroll's Through the Looking Glass, "It takes all the running you can do to keep in the same place." And she continued, "If you want to get somewhere else, you must run at least twice as fast as that." We need a strong membership committee to continue the work of encouraging new members to join and helping to get them plugged in. We can use a few new members on that important committee, so if you're interested, please let me or let Chair Thomas Irvin know if he's here. And it's a wonderful and fun committee to be a part of. The staff here works very hard, and on top of their usual duties, both the administrator, Jeanette Morrow, and the DRE, Jeff Melcher, have had to spend some of their time dealing with building repair issues. Jeff, because of the religious education spaces that he needs, and Jeanette, because she manages our rentals. There was no active building committee when I arrived, although there were people who worked on various aspects of the building. As staff supervisor, I was quite concerned about the amount of time staff was spending on building issues. I mentioned to the board that I had not seen this level of staff involvement in building issues in other congregations, at least those I've served, except in larger ones where there is a staff member whose job is building maintenance. And there aren't too many of those. The board was quite responsive, and members Diane Estrada and Jim Harrison stepped forward to form a new building committee that has helped ease this additional stress on the staff. And this new committee has accomplished a great deal. You can read about it in the annual report. Turning to your future, I would say that I see this congregation as a beacon of light in this community, a place for the nurturing of Unitarian Universalist values, a place where children can get a firm grounding in these values, and where adults can come together to learn and to grow and support one another in times of need. This congregation is already all of these things, but I believe it can be more. Someday, perhaps, much more. A congregation of, dare I say, maybe 350 like-minded souls, with at least one full-time minister, with many outreach programs and services to the community, with a full-time DRE, and many more events going on all week, concerts, lectures, classes, dinners, and other social events, some as rentals and some as your own community building and even income-generating events. Dreams like this, which many of you have shared with me in various venues over the past 2 years, dreams like this are where this kind of development has to start, with positive images of what can be, castles in the air, as Henry David Thoreau put it. In your immediate future, your new minister arrives now in just 3 months, and I can tell you the sense of anticipation is palpable. The interim ministers, we say we feel like jilted lovers at about this time. But it's as it should be. I want to remind you that although I, as your interim minister, have regularly attended the meetings of many, many committees, your next minister will serve as a developmental minister, a relatively new category of transitional ministry that's focused on specific goals. And he may not be able to attend as many committee meetings because he will be focusing on the specific goals that the board has given him with input from the congregation. These goals include developing a clear sense of mission, financial planning for sustainability, strategizing to keep people engaged, developing a plan for growth, and shedding that burdensome self-image that comes with having had too many disappointing experiences in the past. Your new minister can certainly help lead you into a positive, vibrant and financially solvent future. But I want to caution you not to put all your hopes into the ministerial basket. It takes all of you working together. There is a quip I once heard about what it's like being a Unitarian Universalist minister that really cracked me up because I recognized how true it is. I mentioned this last year, but it bears repeating as you bring on a new minister. The quip is, being a Unitarian Universalist minister is like pushing a wheelbarrow full of frogs. Picture it. This description can apply to lay leaders as well. So there you are, pushing that wheelbarrow in a particular direction, but the frogs have their own ideas, and they are jumping every which way and sometimes out of the wheelbarrow altogether. As I said last year, sometimes this independent-minded, froggy nature of Unitarian Universalists results in forward motion when minister, leaders, and congregation all move together in a positive direction. So that is what I wish for you for your future as you continue with a new transitional ministry, a longer one. It will take collective vision, patience, persistence, faith, and mutual trust. But many wonderful and growthful things can happen when you work together. I close with that quote of Henry David Thoreau that I alluded to earlier about the wisdom of developing a vision. As he wrote, "If you have built castles in the air, your work need not be lost. That is where they should be. Now, put the foundations under them."